want me to speak in my podcast voice?
There you go.
I do not want you to speak in your podcast voice.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Top Podcast.
We're practicing these voices so we can seduce Lou when he returns.
You can't roll your R's.
That wasn't an attempt to roll my R. That was just going...
Okay.
She goes.
There you go.
All right, so I want to know...
Sorry.
So I want to know, what's at least one old thing you guys do?
Like old person thing?
Yeah. I know you have a bunch of those hard candies just in your pocket when you go to church.
I do constantly have lozenges in my fanny pack.
Wow. There you go.
And a fanny pack.
Oh, the double.
Double whammy. Yeah, that counts. Lozenges in your fanny pack, aside from sounding like the world's greatest innuendo, is absolutely an old person thing.
It's because I work at a school and I need to have hands free and I always have a sore throat. Shut the
Oh my god.
Both my mother and my mother-in-law listen to this podcast.
I really, really like to eat dinner as soon as is humanly possible after getting off work.
Amen. And when
I was working in the warehouse and I got out of work at 4, you better believe I was putting down dinner before 5 p.m.
Early dinner is superior.
Oh, so good. So good.
I don't want to sit around and wait until it's friggin' dark out to have my dinner and then go to bed right away.
So no. if it wasn't for me, you would have dinner at 3:30, 4, as soon as you got home?
I might. There are days I have a snack when I get home from work, and I'm like, man, I'd rather just eat a meal and be done for the day than maybe have a snack at bedtime. As opposed to having a snack because I'm hungry when I get home from work and then having to make a whole nother meal later in the day.
That's fair. I've been doing this crazy thing. I'm still trying to see if the math works where I'm like rotating which meals I have for my intermittent fast. So okay. Like today I had breakfast and lunch because I figure when you're intermittent fasting, you basically skip lunch or you skip breakfast and then you have lunch and dinner. And so like, I'm just like, all right, well, I ate lunch today, and then I'm just good until, I eat breakfast tomorrow, maybe? I haven't figured it out yet. I don't really know. I'm just doing, like, two meals and making sure they're super high protein.
Yeah. The fun fact about intermittent fasting is more studies came out, and it shows...
It's just for boys. Women,
basically, because our hormonal cycle is a cycle and not just, like, the same all the time. Mm-hmm. It can really f*** with our hormones, and it did mine. That's why I had to stop it.
Yeah. Wah, wah.
That's okay.
For me, it's either yelling at kids or wanting to watch Jeopardy. I don't get to watch Jeopardy as much as I'd like, but
never yelled at a kid.
I did not know you liked Jeopardy.
Also, Becca, you yelled at a kid for picking our flowers.
Okay, that is an exaggeration. Okay, I got
scream
a little
cussed him out over the door, over the Ring doorbell.
I got a little bleep that there was a person at our door, so I looked, and there's this kid, and I was like, a kid. I don't really care if they play on our lawn, quite frankly. Our lawn is 98% weeds. They're not ruining anything by walking on it. But then she started picking my flowers, so I turned on the microphone and very politely said, please stop picking my flowers, and then she left.
I was there, and she very politely said, get the out of here.
Yeah, the kid looked around like God himself was speaking down, and I think she wet herself when she was walking.
Oh my gosh.
Thank you for joining us on this week's episode of the Top Podcast. In case you haven't inferred already, this is my wife, Becca. She is joining us on this week's topic as we talk about the very first Harry Potter book, The Sorcerer's Stone. Now, I was going to say on a technicality, this was my first read through of The Sorcerer's Stone, because my history with Harry Potter is I came from a house that wasn't allowed to read Harry Potter. So what's the main thing is about? It's an accessibility issue, not, a monetary issue. So I did what any good kid did and, somehow obtained Harry Potter. It just kind of popped up on my hard drive. I don't know what happened. I think maybe someone Bluetoothed in or beamed it in using T-Mobile. If you watch Shark Tank, you know.
I have those monthly sales figures. Let me beam them to your T-Mobile device.
And it was the Philosopher's Stone. So I think all that changed was obviously the Philosopher's Stone. And then instead of soccer, they say football. I think that's about all the changes in the first book.
Yes, they say soccer, and I'm always caught off guard by it.
I feel like there was another one that I remember popping up in the books at some point, but yeah, it's really just the lingo that changes.
Now, Mike, I know you had a very fun story about, like, at least your family reacting to Harry Potter. I think it was the first time, but I don't know if you want to tell the audience about that.
I'm not sure to what you're referring. So originally when I started, I was reading the Artemis Fowl books and I was enjoying those. And on the back it said, Harry Potter, better watch out, which is hilarious because, like, I mean, the Artemis Fowl books were all right, but they don't hold a candle, especially not in, like, Harry Potter need to feel threatened. But I came to my mom and I was like, hey, you know, I think I want to check these out. I'm like 15. I think I can handle children's books about witchcraft if they're actually, you know. And so we ended up just watching the first two movies, and they were good. They were okay. I feel like they were the most faithful to the books. So we got to three and I was like, I'm going to read number three. And I was probably about halfway through, and massive spoilers for Harry Potter 3, The Prisoner of Azkaban, if you haven't read it already for some reason.
Would you be listening to this episode if you hadn't read the Harry Potter books?
Yeah. I mean, do listen. Just, you know, skip like 30 seconds ahead. So I'm reading it, and my mom, who's been watching these movies with me to keep an eye on it, decides she's going to check out this book. And so she reads the dust cover. She reads the first chapter. She flips to the last page in front of me and goes, I knew Sirius Black was a good guy. I'm still not over this, man. Like,
that was what I was thinking of.
Okay, yeah. I was just like, I'm just going to start talking about my history until I get to that story at least, because that's a good one.
Where's Dracula again?
Dude, yeah. So Rob is currently reading it, so I won't say, but she also, I asked.
I finished Dracula.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah, I asked, sorry, time is a weird thing. We're a couple weeks ahead on our recording schedule, so I just listened to Rob today saying he was reading Dracula.
Oh, but yeah.
I forgot that was a couple weeks old. So I'm looking for the physical book. I go, hey, where's Dracula? And my mom goes, dead in Transylvania?
Bam. Zinger.
Yeah, except I was still in London at that point. So, like, she was like, what? You knew he was going to die. I was like, yeah, but I didn't know they were going to go back to Transylvania. Sorry, spoilers for Dracula.
I think Cantwell's finished it, so we're good on that point. And he's finished two books since he was on the pod. Man's an animal. My goodness,
he is. It's at 0.25 or 1.25 speed.
I think he does it on two.
He does it on two?
Yeah, he's.
How does he understand it?
I don't know. Comment down below, Cantwell. What's the magic here? How do we get that? Mike, you kind of had a way you wanted to go about talking about this book, so it's a little more structured. What were you thinking about?
I just thought it'd be fun if we all had just a couple things we felt like talking about that we could go through, and I don't care if we finish these lists. I just figured if any point where we're like, oh, what do we say next, we can just, you know, move on to the next one. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I really like is plot holes, and these seem to pop up the most in the early seasons of shows and in the early books in a series. And there are so many just fun little potholes that I caught while I was reading through. I got three. There was a fourth one that I was driving the moped when I heard it. And by the time I got home, I had forgotten what it was. So I didn't have time to write it down. But the plot holes I noticed. Becca, do you want to take... Well, you're not going to... You didn't actually read it.
I noticed something that wasn't a plot hole, but was just dumb.
Also, spoilers for the Sorcerer's Stone, in case you haven't. I know we gave spoilers for the Prisoner of Azkaban, but we'll just say blanket spoilers for the Harry Potter series.
There we go.
Yeah.
Cover our bases. So, like, and Dracula.
We watched the movie, and I wouldn't have noticed this, I don't think, just from the book, but the visual of the movie got me thinking that they put all this work in to protecting the Sorcerer's Stone. They've got the enchanted chest set and the keys and the potions and the devil snare and Fluffy. But you know what they put Fluffy behind? A door that opens with freaking Alohomora.
That first years can use.
That Hermione, the 11-year-old Hermione Granger can get into. on an entire floor that they do nothing to protect other than say, hey, don't go there, to a bunch of teenagers. You know, friend George were up there as soon as they heard it was closed.
Let's pivot off plot holes for a minute then, because I actually do have a point, one thing I wanted to talk about that ties into that slightly. Have either of you seen the Super Coen Brothers video on Dumbledore's master plan?
I have not.
Do you mean Super Carlin Brothers?
Yeah.
Ben and Jay.
Hey, brother.
Yep.
Yeah, those guys. Deepest apologies. I just discovered them recently. I don't know if it's crazy old. I saw it in a supercut where they did all seven books. Point being, their big theory, they have this huge theory about, like, that kind of like solves a lot of stupid things in Harry Potter. Like, for example, none of it makes any sense, right? If Dumbledore somehow knows that Voldemort is coming to try and steal the Sorcerer's Stone, I'm pretty sure he could have just convinced Nicholas Flamel to destroy the stone. He didn't need to hide it in Hogwarts and then have Voldemort try and get it and then convince it. Like, no.
Right,
like,
yeah.
The whole thing was utterly pointless. Unless the whole point was for Dumbledore to watch and observe and test to see what Harry was capable of and how he would react in these situations, knowing what Harry was going to have to go through in the later end of the series. And so the theory is Harry was meant to go through those challenges, and that's part of why it was so easily accessible, was because that Dumbledore wanted Harry to do exactly what he did. That's why he gave him the invisibility cloak and just left the Mirror of Erised sitting in a random room, you know, completely unlocked up. There's so many things that, when you really think about it critically, make absolutely no sense in the book unless everything was puppet mastered by Dumbledore right from the start.
Well, and let's be honest, the whole flying key thing would have been a lot harder if they hadn't left a broom there.
The movie, I think, actually did that better. I think the movie actually did that better, where the keys are like trying to attack Harry, because in the book they just have three brooms and the keys just fly around.
Yeah, that's one of the rare moments where I do think the movie improved. And the other thing is, none of the challenges make any sense. Nobody can get, like, there is no possible way Voldemort could get the Sorcerer's Stone out of the Mirror of Erised. There was no point in protecting it beyond that, unless you were actually testing Harry and the Golden Trio.
That's a fair point. And I could also see it coming up in other movies as well.
Yeah, there were tons of...
I'd have to think about it, or just watch the video, I guess.
Yeah, the video is really good. Maybe I can find it. I'll send it to Rob. We can drop it in the comments or something. But it is worth a watch if after, you know, you listen to this one. But definitely, definitely worth a watch. I enjoyed it immensely.
And I actually watched a video. I think, Becca, we've watched some of them. But I think it's Merv. I think she does, like, a lot of BookTube things. And she has a series of plot holes, like inconsistencies in Sorcerer's Stone. I actually watched that today. But yeah, and along with that, like, Harry isn't even needed. Like, he didn't show up. If he didn't go that night there, Dumbledore still would have defeated Quirrell, and it, like, he didn't need to be there at all.
No, it was 100% a Indiana Jones and the Ark of the Covenant thing, where it's like, you actually kind of made it worse. like because Harry got there, he ended up taking out the stone and putting it in, like, putting it in jeopardy.
You said jeopardy, and now Rob just...
What other plot holes do you got, Mike?
So one, when telling Harry about his parents, he mentions that James and Lily were head boy and girl at Hogwarts. No, they weren't. James wasn't even a prefect. And unless I drastically misunderstood, that's kind of a prerequisite. Not important at all, but, you know, fun little plot hole.
Oh, you're right, because Remus mentions being the only one in their
group. Remus was the good boy. He's the one who got the badge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, Dumbledore does like to bend rules for the Potters, so maybe he was like, I just have the head boy badge.
Yeah, somehow I just don't see that being what happened. So, and I don't think he even likes to bend rules for the Potters. I think he's essentially, through these seven books, kind of just blatantly putting every single student's education at risk for the greater cause of defeating Voldemort.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, less about favoring Harry and more about, like, everything he does is just kind of to you know, win the war.
So I have something, I think it was in the, it's right around there, same chapter. I thought it was something that Hagrid says, anyone who is touched by an evil curse will get a lightning bolt scar. Why is Harry so special then when there's this huge war of dark wizards? Anyone with the Crucius curse should have gotten a lightning bolt scar. And I have the, it's from chapter 4, it says,
that's no ordinary cut. That's what you get when a powerful evil curse touches you.
Interpret that as him saying every time somebody gets hit with an evil curse, they get a scar like that. I more interpret it as saying, like,
that's what you get when a powerful evil curse touches you. Bam, it's right there. It's right in the text.
Yeah, but you have to account for the fact that Hagrid has, like, a third grade wizarding education. So I would chalk that up to, Hagrid being lovable but a little bit stupid outside of his area of expertise.
Yeah.
The other thing you could say is, yeah, I don't know. I also just think he's wrong. My interpretation of it is that's the Horcrux burned into Harry's body. Mm. But that also doesn't make a ton of sense because I think that means the Horcrux should be, or the scar should be gone after. So that
does he still have the scar after?
I think he does because the final sentence is that the scar hasn't hurt in however many years.
Just saying, more people should be walking around with lightning bolt scars.
That's true.
I think it would look a lot cooler.
You have to survive Avada Kedavra. It's not just the Unforgivables.
I just always interpreted it as it being more of like, not necessarily that specific scar, but it's like, yeah, when you get attacked by an Unforgivable curse, you're left with a mark.
And it just happened to look like a lightning bolt.
Yeah.
It's probably something you didn't think of.
Yeah, I do think that falls under, unlike you guys,
I like to interpret things like the Bible literally, and I know Mike has compared Harry Potter to the Bible.
I think I've compared my reading habits of the two. So here's the thing. When you're interpreting the Bible, you have to understand what parts of literature you're reading, and this is
it's all dialogue. Literal. There's no figurativeness in the Bible.
This is the dialogue of a not super intellectual individual. But no, I do suspect you're right that it was definitely something that JK wrote and hadn't really didn't consider the ramifications of.
I think there's a lot of that in this book. Yeah.
Like, I wonder how much of the quote unquote foreshadowing that we see in the first book is actually foreshadowing and how much of it is her writing later and then going back to her old books and pulling things and putting them in.
That's I think what a lot of foreshadowing is in books.
I think it was as someone who's done some writing, it's a bit of both.
Mm-hmm.
There have even been points where I added things in with no plan, but I was like, this feels like the right spot to have. I want to be able to come back to this, and if I end up never coming back to it, I can just cut it later. What I heard at some point, I think it was my mom had read it about some kind of interview, is that essentially she had a skeleton structure for the whole series. And then when she published the first book, it did well. They're like, hey, would you be interested in writing a sequel? She was like, how about six? and so I think that certain elements were planned ahead. And then I think things like Harry swallowing the snitch for things that she went back and went, oh, this could be cool.
Yeah.
Tie back.
Or like Griphook being the goblin that showed Harry to his.
Yeah, that was definitely a... Oh, let's just go back and grab a
and the centaur in the forest.
Ferenzi.
Mm-hmm.
Which in the movie they call him Ferenz.
Ooh, don't like that. Another plot hole is Harry comes up to the Dursleys and he's like, hey, can I get a ride to King's Cross Station? And, Vernon's like, odd way to get to a wizarding school, the train. And he's like, yeah, I got to go to platform 9 3/4. And they're both like, what? No. Unless Petunia's playing some long con where she's already prepared to just leave Harry in London and just drive away, she shouldn't be confused about platform 9 3/4. Her sister went for 7 years.
You know, that's a fair point. If she knows what the mentors are.
I got a bigger plot hole for that.
The smallest plot hole of all time, yeah.
The way I would write it is her parents were instructed to take Lily there in secret, you know, without Petunia. But Petunia does say that when Lily came home, she would turn teapots into rats. And it is expressly forbidden in this book that students aren't allowed to use magic during the summer. So even that was a, you know, a plot hole. I don't know if that was like very early on and then he like added that the end that you're not allowed to use magic and kind of forgot about it. But Petunia definitely says Lily was using magic when she was home.
Yeah. Now, it could also be that they lived near adult wizards because Lily and Snape were friends. So there's the possibility
and that could be changed later, but Fred and George like, I wish they'd forget to send this out every year. So in the first book, it's implied that even the people with wizarding parents aren't allowed to do it.
Oh, sure. But it's, you're not allowed to do it, but the way it's monitored is that it's monitored based on any magic. Now, first of all, the trace is something that is its own plot hole that kind of fluctuates based on
it. Really is.
But the way it's supposed to work is that it just registers magic done around you. And so, for example, children of wizarding families, it's the parents' job to just keep an eye on their kids because the trace is going off for these kids all the time as the parents use magic.
Mm-hmm. And we know that it's...
So if she was near an adult wizard like Snape's parents, for example, or Snape's mom, then perhaps she was in close enough proximity that she could get away with it sometimes.
She'd have to be really close, though, because they knew that Dobby used magic in Harry's house. Like, it wasn't just,
That shows us how close you can be, but it doesn't show how far you have to be.
Snape was hiding out in that grove, don't you know? That tree. That's where he just pops up out of.
Yeah.
What?
He's remembering the prince's tale from 7.
Okay.
It's when Snape is hiding behind the tree or the bush and he's watching Lily and...
He's creepy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I just want to, this kind of was an icebreaker I had, but I wanted to do something that wasn't Harry Potter. If the wizarding world is real, the 90s, it's kind of believable, you know, maybe the internet was still kind of a niche thing back then and all that. But nowadays with Ring doorbells and all that and cameras everywhere, do you think the wizarding world would have been exposed by now? Because they can't erase it off a camera. They can erase the memory, but, you know, I feel like with the amount of technology we have and just random cameras places, people would figure out where the wizarding world was.
That's a really good question.
I wonder if magic would also develop to kind of have...
Yeah, that would be my first thought, is that there'd be a whole new, like, branch of the ministry whose job it was to, like...
They're hackers, hackers. They don't have they're squibs that can hack.
That'd honestly be hilarious. but even, like... Like they say that like Muggle technology doesn't work around Hogwarts because there's too much magic in the air. So, you know, theoretically, you could find a way to jam cameras when they're trying to film magical happenings.
My thought is that magic just doesn't register right, or that it like gets blurry, or there's some sort of permanent disillusionment.
But then, minus the cameras, Reddit, someone's be like, you know, I had this strange dream, or you know. People are not going to be able to keep shut with anonymous, if it's anonymous. People start putting these connections like, all this London area, there's a lot of people doing this. Oh, it's happening in America and, you know, Bulgaria and France. It's like, I think we're too connected nowadays that it would be found out with some version of technology. Because as we know,
drive the wizards deeper into hiding.
There you go.
Yeah, it would change the entire, that was what I was going
to
say.
They would have to adapt.
Ultimately, they would adapt and. They could probably stay hidden, but it would look very different, which would actually make for a really interesting story.
It would.
It'd be a weird sci-fi dystopian Potter book, but I'd be down for it.
Or would the wizarding community just come out and try to live in...
Sure, we're all about acceptance nowadays.
I don't think JK lets people come out until after the books are published.
They've been published.
So did anyone else pick up that in Chapter 2... It definitely seems like Harry apparated.
Oh, yeah, when he was running from the bullies and he just jumped onto the roof of the school.
The quote is, on the other hand, he got into trouble for being found on the roof of the school kitchens. Dudley's gang had been chasing him as usual when, as much to Harry's surprise as anyone else, there he was sitting on the chimney. My boy apparated, and he was, you know, under 11. That's some potent passive magic.
He knew his 3Ds.
I always kind of assumed he just, like, floated himself up there quickly, based on the actual text there, it does sound like
this is a surprise. It wasn't like he was just, you know, he started floating. It was, he's just up here now.
Yeah.
I think she made a lot of the rules about magic up as she went.
Oh, I agree. 100%. Because she also didn't have apparating at then. Because why would Dumbledore fly back on a broom both ways? You know, if he thought it was like, I really need to be back at Hogwarts, why wouldn't he just apparate back? So I don't think she thought of that yet.
Haven't you read Hogwarts A History?
Well, okay, just outside the grounds and then just walk in.
That's the plot hole I forgot. Okay, Charlie's friends fly into Hogwarts.
They do.
And they fly to the highest tower to get the to get Norbert. And then they fly off.
There
and
should
they
be
definitely
a lot of
can't
charms.
Do that.
Yeah. Also, another thing is, like, Harry and all that, they know they're getting in trouble for this, but Hagrid wouldn't get in trouble. Why didn't they just send Hagrid up there, you know, have an invisibility cloak over Norbert, and he just walks up there and delivers it? Because then guess what? They wouldn't have gotten in trouble.
Because they're 11.
Yeah, also, I don't know if they could have talked Hagrid into it.
Also, you think if Minerva McGonagall hadn't walked by and been like, oh, hey, Hagrid, what you doing up? That Hagrid wouldn't have just folded immediately.
Like a house of cards, man. Just,
I shouldn't have told you that. Like...
Maybe he's just, you know, the children disarm him. You know, he's more guarded against adults because he knows, like, they're peeving. They're prying. But, you know, the kids, they're unexpecting.
He tells a stranger in a pub how to put Fluffy to sleep.
Well, because he wanted that dragon.
And he was intoxicated, if I remember correctly.
He's kind of an alcoholic in this one.
Yeah, he's one of those characters we all remember fondly, but when you pay attention, you're like, this guy is a deeply emotionally stunted person with deep trauma and a drinking problem.
Yeah.
He does say he's going to give it up, though, I think at the very end of the book.
He does not.
Nope.
Spoilers. He does say that, but he does not go through with that.
Yeah. Well, what do you got for Becca? What do you...
One thing that I thought was interesting was that they say... Hagrid says that Gringotts is the only wizarding bank, like, period. So one thing I was wondering is, like, does he just mean it's the only wizarding bank in the UK? Or are all of the wizards all over the world traveling to Gringotts?
Instead
or
of
are
Chase,
there, like,
they got Gringotts.
Gringotts branches?
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe there's got to be branches. And I also got to imagine that that's just a mistake.
I think he probably just means in the UK. Because the UK is pretty small.
We take it literal. Come on. It's a literal podcast.
I mean, honestly, for Britain, I could very well see it being the only wizarding bank, because you're not going to have wizarding banks in non-wizarding exclusive areas.
Right.
Are the banks backed by the government in case there's any, you know, someone tries to do a run on the banks? Do you think the
I don't
ministry
think
has
that? So, because...
Did Bellatrix Lestrange have insurance on Helga Hufflepuff's cup?
No, because in, I want to say it's 7, but there's a point where they say that... the ministry has taken over control of Gringotts from the goblins.
Yes.
So at least in book one, it is entirely a goblin-run institution. So if there was insurance, it would be through the goblins. And frankly, I do not trust them to pay out on an insurance claim.
Say, for all of the quotes about how, like, goblins are untrustworthy and they don't like goblins, they sure put a lot of trust in the goblins.
Right.
Well, the Malfoys hide their stuff under their mattresses, so that's why, you know.
How'd the goblins get their hands on dragons? That's another one.
It's legal for them. They had a permit.
They had a permit.
Now, the bigger question is it animal cruelty to keep dragons locked down underground?
Oh, without question.
Chained up, yeah. But, you know, there's a lot of animal cruelty in those books.
Yeah.
Mike, you got another point?
This is something that's always bothered me. Is what the heck is up with the house point economy in Sorcerer's Stone?
It makes no sense.
Like,
50 points.
Yeah, the second you hit book 2 through 7, well, I guess 2 through 6, really, there's, like, a consistent, like, this is what a good answer is worth, and, like, you know, 10 points always kind of weighs the same. Mm-hmm. But it's like she, like, there was either this, either Dumbledore gave away so many points at the end of book 1 that he caused massive inflation within the house point economy, or my other theory is that first years actually... gain and lose on a smaller scale, like the points that they get weighted because they're first years and they're going to make more mistakes, and so we want them to have less an effect. Or much more likely, she changed her mind in book 2 and just stuck with it for the rest of the series.
Yeah, because there's no
consistent within the book, though. It's like sometimes she's giving out single points, and then other times it's just like 150
being out of bed.
Yeah.
This will lead into my next one. It's like, you get punished for being out of bed late at night in a spot you're not supposed to be. So what are we going to do? We're going to put you in detention late at night in a spot where you're not supposed to be.
With a
drunkard.
And
a cowardly dog.
Don't blame Fang. He's just a baby.
I got nothing wrong with Fang, but detention at 11 p.m.? Come on. That is outrageous.
It does make no sense.
They say that...
Very convenient for the plot.
A reminder to the first years that the Forbidden Forest is strictly off limits. What do we do?
Older students should know as well.
Yeah.
By now.
And they send them right in there with a crossbow. Doesn't seem like enough.
I was trying to think of, like, themes that she was putting into the story other than just, like, love. Because, And I noticed that all three of our golden trio show, like, an inherent longing for belonging. Like, they want to belong so badly. Like, we see Harry is an outcast in his family, like, in his own family unit. And he just wants a place where he feels at home, where he feels like he belongs in a family. Ron always feels like he's, you know, second place, like he's not really valued, and he wants like to feel place. That value and importance.
Yeah. And he also has the unenviable birth order position of the last in a long string of boys before a girl.
Yeah. And then you also have Hermione. What did I write for Hermione?
Oh, she wants to be accepted.
She's
a mudblood.
Hermione wants to be liked for who she is and not, or like considered as a person, like for who she is as a person and not have everything put on like her brains, you know? Like, I think she's trying to find a place where she's accepted for her personality and not for her intelligence. And I think she's probably lived a good chunk of her life being told that she's important because she's smart based on how she behaves. And she probably is longing to find friends and a group that just like her for who she is, which is why she latches onto Ron and Harry so fast after the troll.
That makes sense.
That was something I noticed, is that all three of these kids just desperately want to be liked and valued and loved.
Yeah, you even see it in Neville, too. He's like...
Oh, yeah.
Neville's home life is just a man.
Yeah. Neville, probably one of the most underrated characters in the series. Like, for how complex of a character he really is.
He's got a good fan base. But...
I don't think he's underrated either. I think people really appreciate. He did, the actor himself did have that huge glow up, which was hilarious.
It was really convenient.
Like, they essentially had to like ugly him up for the last couple movies. That's one of the reasons. I mean, if we want to talk book first movies, Neville is great in the first book. And you really don't get a lot of that in the first movie. Like, you lose the whole, I'm worth 12 of you, Malfoy, and Neville taking on Crabbe and Goyle single-handed in a fist fight.
Neville,
I don't know what she took him on, or is they were just pounding on him.
Yeah, but still, like... He went for the fight. He got his ass kicked, but, like, he still, like, was like, I got this. And, I mean, he didn't, but still.
He was brave. Just because it was stupid doesn't mean it wasn't brave.
That's why he's in Gryffindor. Which, I know what houses you guys are in, but for the audiences, why don't you guys tell what houses you're in?
You go first.
I am proudly a Gryffindor.
Obnoxiously a Gryffindor. No, I'm a Hufflepuff.
G-Town.
I have been reassessing lately. I'm not sure.
You're a Ravenclaw.
See.
Who desperately wants to be a Slytherin?
I would have guessed Slytherin or Gryffindor, but maybe Ravenclaw. I don't know. Like I said, I'm reassessing. I really don't know.
But for the longest time, you claim to be.
For the longest time, I'd have told you I was a Slytherin. No question. Going through some big life changes. Personality changes coming along with it. And I'm not sure right now.
Yeah. I really feel like I could be three of them. Hufflepuff's really the only one where I couldn't like fit in.
I'm way too lazy to be a Hufflepuff, man. No question. I couldn't. I don't have the work ethic to be a Hufflepuff. I wish I was a Hufflepuff. Are you?
No, I don't.
Quite nice.
Like
Hufflepuff's just become like the cool, like Gryffindor was the cool kids thing, but now everyone wants to be a Hufflepuff.
I mean, I just want to be a Hufflepuff because like to have that discipline to just be like, yeah, no, I'm just going to show up and do the grind day in and day out. You know how good that is for you? Like,
right. Yes, I do.
You should aspire to be a Hufflepuff.
Nah.
And it's hilarious that they are like the punching bag of the school.
It really is funny because, like, not only are they hardworking, but the other two, like, main things are, like, loyalty and fairness, which are just generally good friend qualities. So, like, I don't know why everyone's, like, doesn't want to be friends with the Hufflepuffs when they feel like, I feel like they'd be making the best friends.
Although they also have Ernie McMillan, and he kind of sucks.
Yeah, but Justin Finch Fletchley's all right. And we got Tonks. We got Tonks.
Tonks, yeah, I mean, ooh, that's a fun question. Who's the best wizard?
From each house?
Dumbledore. Yeah.
Are we talking most skilled wizard or just like best?
Who's the best,
like,
character from each house? Character. I guess is a way better question.
Yeah. Definitely Tonks for Hufflepuff.
I mean, yeah. I would have to say Harry just because you see the most because you're inside of his head. So character-wise,
I'd go Fred,
you see
man.
The most.
But there's definite bias there. Yeah. I'd go Fred. I'd also consider Lupin.
Lupin's my favorite character in the whole series.
Not serious?
Fred's my favorite.
You could not serious?
No, not
I wouldn't be mad at you for bringing Sirius to the argument, but I probably wouldn't vote Sirius. But he's, I mean, of course Gryffindor's going to have the most good options. Yeah.
McGonagall.
Yeah.
McGonagall's great. My favorite Ravenclaw is Luna, without a doubt. Although, I do enjoy me some Gilderoy Lockhart.
Yeah, I was watching a video.
Was a Ravenclaw?
Yeah, I was watching a video, and they got sorted into Ravenclaw and Pottermore, and it's like, the famous wizards, like, Gilderoy Lockhart, and he's like, oh, it's like, that's the first one you put up, is Gilderoy Lockhart?
How is he not a Slytherin? That doesn't make any sense. He's just a selfish, ambitious, like, okay, whatever.
Quirrell was also a Ravenclaw.
That makes sense. Have you ever thought about the fact that Quirrell gets addressed like he's been at the school for some time?
Even though it's supposed to be his first year?
Yeah. I don't think she had planned on it.
They do say Snape's gun for his job or something along those lines. At least in the movie.
Snake?
Snape.
He definitely said Snake.
We can play it back.
I mean, he's a Slytherin, so he's a snake. So I stand with my vocabulary.
Slytherin. I think that Snape is a wonderful character. Brilliantly done character.
Terrible guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did an entire read through just to answer the question for myself. Is Snape actually a good guy?
Snape
not even
is
a little
on the right
bit.
Side, but he's a bad person.
Yeah.
Yeah, so here's my question. This is one of the points ahead. They talk about that Snape was sitting next to Quirrell during the Quidditch match, and then, like, after it, he was eyeing Quirrell. So it seems like Snape knew that Quirrell was trying to kill Harry. Why didn't he freaking say anything to Dumbledore or anything? Like, I get, like, because his whole thing was, I have to protect Harry, like, that was said.
Right.
Like, or, why didn't he say anything? Yeah, like, you would think that he would say something, even though because then he'd be like, all right, I saved Harry, that's it, I'm done, I don't have to be nice to him anymore. Like, it doesn't make any sense that, and then, you know, he volunteers the ref again. Why not just out him right then and there, you know?
Well, and the thing of it is, too, is we learn in Book 7 that Dumbledore told Snape to keep an eye on Quirrell. So, like, Dumbledore, I guess you could make, going back to the Dumbledore master plan argument then, you could make the case that Dumbledore wanted Harry to have the chance to go up against Quirrell. Mm-hmm. And so they just let him roam the school for the whole year.
I mean, it wouldn't be the first time one of Voldemort's servants just roamed the school all year.
I mean,
or I guess
true.
It would be the first time. It won't be the last.
Shout out to Quirrell's monologue at the end. I'm like, as he was doing, I'm like, okay, we're getting the evil monologue. It's, I don't know if that was a staple of the time, but now I'm just like, all right, come on.
One of my favorite things to do when I'm bored is pick other fictional characters and sort them.
Ooh.
Ones that are really fun to do are Star Trek characters.
I like it.
Kirk.
Like, let's think. Yeah, so, well, Kirk is a no-brainer.
Gryffindor.
Yep. But I think Picard is a much harder one. Eileen Ravenclaw with Picard.
But Data. I would
What's
agree
Data?
With that.
Data
is...
Is Data a Hufflepuff? He's hardworking.
That was my first inclination. I'm trying to decide if that's because he wears yellow or not, though.
Right?
What about the whales from Star Trek 4?
They're whales.
What house? Sort
them.
Oh,
Real House.
Yeah.
I'm going
Sounds
Hufflepuff.
Like a
whales or for Data?
Yeah, I'd say whales. You know, they're generally hardworking. They're loyal. They're fair, you know, for the most part. Unless it's Orcra. Then you're screwed.
Honestly, I think the reason Data is so hard to put in a house is because his character is all about the pursuit of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't really say, outside of Slytherin, you can easily say he doesn't belong in Slytherin, but because he represents this pursuit of humanity, there are elements that would fit perfectly into all three of the remaining houses.
But would you say he doesn't belong in Slytherin? Because I would say his pursuit of humanity is incredibly ambitious.
It's ambitious, but I would argue that ambition isn't... I would argue that selfish ambition lands you in Slytherin. Because if you look at somebody like Percy, he should have been in Slytherin if ambition is the only factor.
Screw Percy.
Well, I also don't think, like, the houses are... They're fluid. Only embody these traits. Mm-hmm. I think it's which traits stand out the most in you or are the most core to you. Because, like, plenty of people could have been in either house.
Hermione should have been in Ravenclaw.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, Slytherin had seriously considered putting her in Ravenclaw.
He did. I believe Neville was almost a Hatstall as well.
All right, so I got two characters for you.
Okay.
Would Superman be in Hufflepuff or Gryffindor?
Gryffindor?
Agreed, but I really don't know my Superman lore that well.
And then would Batman be a Slytherin? I think he would.
Cunning and ambition are the two major Slytherin qualities. There are others. I'm about to Google it. Slytherin, the house.
That sounds like Batman.
Yeah, but he's
brave.
He's also one of those ones you could really kind of put into any house.
I could see him in Ravenclaw.
Yeah, I could see him in Ravenclaw. I could see him in Gryffindor.
He's not like boisterous enough to be in Gryffindor.
Dude grinds hard.
Determined, achievement oriented.
Batman.
Strong sense of self-preservation. Not really.
I mean, he wants to like preserve.
See, that doesn't sound Batman to me.
Wayne legacy. Funny. But anyways, leave us down below what comment you think, what house would Batman be in, and other fictional characters that and what houses they'd be in.
You know who might be a Slytherin though based on this? Iron Man. Hmm. Cunning, resourcefulness, achievement oriented. Just a thought.
I hear it. That's one of the great flaws that I think the Harry Potter series definitely does have is the no good Slytherin problem.
Absolutely.
That really was a, like, there's not too, like, there's things where I'm like, yeah, this is young adult fantasy fiction, don't be reading this and then being like, well, it's not Chaucer, because it's not meant to be Chaucer,
right?
But I do think the no good Slytherin is an actual genuine failing of the series.
You do get Horace Slughorn.
Yeah,
he failed. I mean, if yeah, it wasn't for him, Voldemort wouldn't have raised the power.
Yeah, I mean, he is without a doubt the best Slytherin
that we have an example of.
And right. That's not, yeah, and it's not saying much, because really,
yeah.
Kind of creepy how he has his collection, but we'll move on from that. We're not in book six.
Yeah. Horace Slughorn? What? Horace Slughorn is a bit of a groomer. I'm just going to say it.
And we don't know that he ever did anything with his students.
He just has some red flags.
He does. 100%.
He's got some red flags.
I wouldn't want him around my kid. He's also racist, so.
Yeah. Maybe he's not that great of a guy.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, he's the least bad Slytherin. He's still not, like, a good person.
I don't know. Ominous is a pretty good Slytherin.
I do like him.
If we're going to go into the game extended universe, I suppose.
If we're going into the extended universe, then Pottermore says Merlin is a Slytherin, and Merlin's, like.
Wasn't Merlin before?
Yeah.
So, what?
I say
that doesn't make any sense.
They like put the sorting hat on his grave or something.
Yeah. Hey, yo, Merlin.
The founders went to the Hogshead one night and got a little toasty, and we're like, all right, let's go through the greats. Who gets who? I think that one of the things I really like in Harry Potter books, and I'm probably in a drastic minority on this. I like a good pre-Hogwarts section.
I agree that I like a good pre-Hogwarts section.
Absolutely. And I think if you're just ranking on the before you get to Hogwarts portion of the books, I think Harry Potter 1 ranks very high.
Maybe like this and 5 with the Dementors? The Dementors.
Pre-Hogwarts. I personally like 5. It is a little long. I get why people don't. 6 is only okay. It's not bad.
Slughorn.
Three is top tier. Three has got to be the best pre-Hogwarts, without a question.
With the bus.
And two's pretty good as well. I'd say one, two, and three are probably the top three. And then five,
four
six,
isn't
four,
bad either.
And then seven doesn't count.
I think four is pretty good.
Yeah, it's not one of my favorites.
With the first
but
Death Eater's appearance.
Yeah.
I heard an interesting theory that Becca told me about when we watched the movie last night. Some people think the snake that Harry released was Nagini. Doesn't make
Dumb
any sense.
Theory. Thing
yeah,
was freaking
no
raised in captivity.
I mean, I love the theory. It's a lot of fun. Not a chance. Yeah. This random snake just happened to make its way to... Because was Nagini the last of the Horcruxes that he created?
Harry was. Yeah, Harry was.
Well, no, because I think he made Nagini after Harry.
No,
you know
what?
I think you're right.
Was
no, because
like after he got Harry, that's when he like you know the spell backfired and he lost all of his power.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's see, because we first see Nagini in
the
intern
four. Look up for it.
I know what are the brothers called? I don't want to get their name wrong again.
Peveril brothers.
One more time.
Peveril.
Sorry, the super what brothers?
Super Carlin brothers.
Carlin. I know they have a video where they make their case for which for the order, and not that they're you know canon or anything.
They do their research though.
They're good. They know what they're talking about.
Well, yeah. I
Man,
think,
I wish I'd known
I
you would have liked
them.
I've been watching their stuff for years.
I think it was because Nagini further kept Voldemort alive after he turned into a Horcrux with the murder of Bertha Jorkins in 1994. And I think Harry's is in 1997. That's when the whole book one happens. So that would only be 3 years before. So yeah, that's after.
Wait. The murder of Bertha Jorkins takes place when Harry Potter is 14 years old.
Yeah.
Okay, so... Oh, yeah, no, that does... Never mind, because that... Never mind, first book happens in 1990. Yeah, so that math adds up.
Yeah, Nagini was an extra, I think, because he thought he never got a chance to make his sixth Horcrux, but it did go into Harry, and so then in making Nagini, he had seven Horcruxes.
Yeah.
Is Bertha... Who's... Is that the gravekeeper guy?
Bertha is the... She's
Poor
a pair
Bertha.
Of magical creatures teacher?
No. So Bertha was a Ministry of Magic employee.
Oh, she was a muggle.
She was kind of hopeless, and she got shunted from department to department. At some point, she was working for Barty Crouch and discovered the existence of Barty Crouch Jr. under the invisibility cloak. And Barty Sr. put a memory charm on her that just really broke her mind. And that's when she... she wasn't hopeless. But because Barty put that memory charm on her, she became kind of like not all there. And so she just, you know, moved from department to department. And then Wormtail runs into her when he's looking for Voldemort. And they torture her until they find out that Barty Jr. is still alive. And that's how Voldemort's able to find Barty Crouch Jr. for book four.
Man, I'm going to have to go back and reread because I very vaguely remember any of that. Like hardly at all.
Yeah, I want to preface this. I've only
told you, man. Freaking Pope.
That was only my second time rereading the first one. I haven't reread any of the other ones.
Oh, I'm excited for this now.
That might have been one of the first books. Like, I don't reread books. Maybe now with Audible, I think it is. So that might have been one of the first books I've reread. Definitely, nice. Like, first five.
I have a vivid memory of the first time I listened to Seven. Because I used to listen to them while I was falling asleep. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm listening to it, right? And it's, like, a dad-approved volume. Because my dad has bionic ears and can hear everything. And will wake up to everything. And then all of a sudden, Creature starts yelling, "Fight! Fight! Fight for the house elf!" at top volume. And I'm, like, scrambling to turn down the CD player. Because Creature's screaming in my ear. And I'm afraid Dad's going to come in and tell me to turn it off.
Then you just tell him he's not a spew ally. Oh,
I don't think he would have cared.
So I have a question. It's mentioned that Ron has Charlie's old wand, but we also find out that the wand chooses the wizard.
Plot hole.
Did Charlie reject the wand? Did the wand end up rejecting him? Like, I get that they're trying to go he's poor, but it doesn't make any sense with the lore and the magic of the world.
Charlie bought himself a new one.
But that was the wand that picked
him, though. Because Charlie worked in Romania. Mm-hmm. So the only thing I can think of is that Charlie left for Romania, I want to say at least a full year before Sorcerer's Stone, because Charlie Weasley was on the team. So yeah. I guess technically he could have. Oh, but no, Charlie was a chaser. I thought he was a keeper, so that doesn't actually matter. Yeah, so Charlie left sometime before Ron started. If he happened to have forgotten his wand somehow,
wizards aren't gonna forget their wand.
Yeah, so that doesn't make. The other possibility could be that he just really wore that thing down, or maybe Charlie was also using a hand-me-down wand, because the wand literally had part of the unicorn hair sticking out of it.
Well, I was going to say, also, maybe for dragon tamers, they have to get, like, a special metal wand or something that will just burn away. But also, like, Fred and George, Percy, they all have their own wands, so really screw Ron.
Yeah. Seriously? Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you know, it could be a matter of, like, we you know, couldn't afford it. We had to get another wand. Also, you'd think that, I mean, it's some crazy favoritism, and maybe this is an oldest child thing, but it's like, okay, Ron just went through his first year with his crappy wand. Now Ginny's going to get her own brand new wand?
Yeah.
No, that gets slid down and Ron gets his new wand. But
didn't even get a new wand until a full year with a spellotaped wand.
Yeah, for real. And which means Ginny's running around with
a brand new wand.
A brand new wand.
Every time Ron sees Ginny doing magic, he's just like,
right.
Pop quiz, who is the other main-ish character that has a hand-me-down wand? Michael.
I don't know. Let's see. I want to say it's Neville.
It is Neville.
Yeah.
Yeah, his dad.
Is it his uncle's? Oh, it's his dad's wand. Yeah, yeah.
Makes sense. His dad doesn't need it. Yeah. He gets his own in... It's either 5 or 6, which is why his magic gets so much better. Yeah.
One thing, the last like nitpicky thing that I noticed when reading this, and I pointed out to Becca, is when there's the list of everything you have to have for students at Hogwarts. The last one in uniform is, please note that all pupils' clothes should carry name tags. Everyone's asking names and everything. They should have their freaking name tag on their robes. Like, everyone's like, are you Harry? It's like, they have a name tag. Where's the name tag, JK? Where's the name tag?
That's actually a really good point.
They're all embroidered in cursive, and none of these kids
They don't teach cursive anymore, so that's why.
The wizards dropped cursive ages ago.
Oh, God bless them.
Yeah, I don't know why that just bugged me this whole time. It's one thing I noticed, like, wait a second. And then, you know, it's not in any of the movies or anything. I'm just like, where's the freaking name tags?
Can you imagine, a little bit of a, like, turn, topic change, can you imagine being a Muggle-born student and spending all this time learning to write with a pencil and then having to go and use a quill? I'd be like, no, I'm using my mechanical pencil that I don't have to dip
Harry
in ink.
Ever,
at least I'm bringing a couple of zebra ink pens, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, Harry never, like, had trouble with it. Never talked about how, like, going from pencil to quill.
Screw these rolls of parchment. I'm using a notebook.
Oh, this is a Microsoft Surface. It's unlimited.
Yeah. How are you going to know how long your homework is if you're not using, a roll of parchment?
Ripped having to count the words, you know, for the word
count. They're moaning about this, like, it'd be, like, 5 inches of homework. And I'm like, that's not even a whole piece of paper.
Doesn't matter about the size of the homework. It's how you use it.
Something that drives me nuts, and this is an audiobook specific complaint. Voldemort is a word of French origin, and it is pronounced Voldemort. Also, I believe, a French word. Right around the time, while listening through the books, I get used to bourgeois and Voldemort. The movies got big, and he starts going Voldemort, which is not how it's supposed to be pronounced, but it's how it's pronounced in the movies, and Bezor, like, you wouldn't even know. I literally had no idea until, like, I heard a bourgeois, and I was like, all right, that's a stone taken from the stomach of a goat that cures most poisons. Okay, sure. And then, by the time I got to 6, I forgot what a bourgeois was, and, like, Harry gets to the antidote yeah, antidote section, and it's like, just shove a Bezoar down his throat. And I was like, okay, a Bezoar, that's a new thing. And then when I went back and read one time, I was like, wait a minute, a Bezoar?
What does that say, Anaya?
What?
No!
Voldemort, fine. Bezoar? Bezoar? No!
And in the movie, we just watched it, he says Bezoar. So even the movies changed it. Like, I don't know why they went with Bezoar later, because they even say Bezoar in the first movie. So that means Bezoar was a book change first.
Yeah. And to be fair, I'd rather say Bezoar. It's so much easier than Bezoar. And I don't sound like I'm like on Bezoar. The cusp of describing a woman taking a lewd photo shoot whenever I say it. But like, you said it properly, apparently, and then you changed it. So,
well, I know what I can't stand for the audiobooks. Mm. The way Hermione says, Harry. Every time, I just cringe a little bit. I don't know why, it rubs me wrong.
He gets better at his female voices.
Well, it's not just the female voice, but it's just the way she says it. How she draws Harry. Out the word. Harry.
It's nostalgic for me. I like it. But I could see how it would bother someone.
It just makes me chuckle. Watching Emma Watson act makes me chuckle as well. It's adorable, little kids.
Shots fired?
No.
She did a good job.
For her age, fantastic job. Yeah. But like watching little kid Emma, she overacts a little bit, and it's cute.
The one line that neither Emma Watson or any other actor or actress in all of Hollywood could hit without sounding cheesy, though, is
same
there are more name. Important things.
Friendship and bravery. Oh, Harry, you be careful.
And cleverness. It's easily the worst dialogue in the whole series. Like, it's like, good book. Blatant. Here's the moral of the story in case you missed it. And then just right back to being a decent book. Like, it's like,
what? The end, Dumbledore has to give his spiel about love. So just in case you re-missed the other plot point.
That's another thing. Freaking Dumbledore is a dick at the end of this book.
I mean, he's like you said, grand plan, he is a dick.
No, for sure. But like, when he goes and reads off all of the house points, and only after announcing Slytherin has the most points
does he
then go, hold up, though, and then gives enough points for Gryffindor to win. He could have started by saying, I have a few last-minute points, and just putting Gryffindor in the lead. But no. He had to dangle that shit in front of Slytherin then toss it over to Gryffindor.
Well, because he was also Gryffindor, so he might have some.
The Slytherins hate Harry and Ron.
Yeah. But also, I think it's more so that then they got suspense of counting them up as the reader. She probably was like, and then they can do the math, too, that... Oh, they're tied with Slytherin. I don't know.
Sure, but like,
if you want, I'm not saying it's a good decision.
You could have narrated that, and then had Dumbledore start talking. You could have been like, they walked in, and this is how many points everybody had, and bada bing, bada boom. But no, Dumbledore says it out loud. Let this Slytherin students like cheer and like bask in their victory.
Yeah, and they had the banners up and everything.
Yeah.
Done, Slytherin. Well done, Slytherin. But. Dumbledore really is kind of, I think he enjoys causing mayhem, and he doesn't care who it hurts.
That's true. Also,
chaotic
school
lawful,
song.
Or lawful chaotic, whatever it is.
Where'd
the school song go?
Or the hat song.
Hoggy woggy Hogwarts, just something, please.
You get new hat songs in the books. You miss them in 2 and 3. I don't remember why you miss it in 3.
Now, Hogwarts has a whole anthem that we only ever hear like twice.
Yeah.
Though we may be old and bold or young with saggy
knees.
The f***
teach us things worth knowing.
I think you know what those knees are doing.
What we forgot. Also, this is the most important thing. The little musical intro at the beginning and at the end of the audiobooks, absolute banger.
Fantastic. I would be lying if I said it didn't get stuck in my head on occasion.
Oh, all the time. Like, at least once a month, I'm humming that song, and often more.
I remember in the movies, when they go and get when Hagrid's playing the flute, he's actually playing the Harry Potter theme song, which I thought was really meta. on the flute.
I like that.
I never noticed that until just now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which also, crazy good song. But
John Williams.
I take the audiobook over the movie. Like,
I'm going to call up John Williams and say, hey, the co-host says you suck, and then hang up.
I'm okay with that.
Make sure you specify what podcast, though, because any publicity is good publicity.
And what person it was.
Yeah, Lou would be really upset if he thought we were talking on his behalf.
Yeah, it comes out, Lou hates John Williams. He's like, I wasn't even here.
You won't even talk actually bad actors, which, by the way, Will Ferrell is overrated, okay?
Thank you.
He was the first person that came to mind when Rob asked for suggestions. I can't stand Will Ferrell in anything other than Elf.
I did not plan this. Thank you. Hey, wait, hold on. Text. Have you seen Anchorman, though?
No, she hasn't.
Yes.
Oh, she has.
Huh? Oh, really? Okay, well, fair enough, I guess.
Not my thing.
We'll watch the second one just to make sure. We have it.
I can't stand D'Angelo Vickers. Can't stand him. Elf is the only thing.
I don't think you're supposed to like D'Angelo Vickers.
But... I don't think you're supposed to like Michael Scott, but here we are. People are delusional.
Yeah, I don't think you're supposed to like a lot of The Office characters, actually.
I don't think you're supposed to like Michael Scott for a very long time.
Yeah, I don't think they started humanizing his character for quite a few seasons.
Yeah, or I think they started it too, but they just went so intentionally slowly.
But who's the real question is, who's the Michael Scott of Hogwarts?
I mean, Gilderoy Lockhart is, actually perfect.
I think it's Lockhart. If you're looking for a more permanent character, though, that's harder.
It is harder.
That's what she said.
Michael! Hagrid's always saying stuff he shouldn't be.
But Percy's actually intelligent.
Yeah. And Percy wants to follow the rules. I don't think Michael Scott really...
That's true.
I would say Percy's more of a Dwight.
No, because he is competent. No,
Percy is Oscar.
Yeah. Actually, you're correct.
Who is the Michael Scott? It's got to be Lockhart. I can't really think of anyone else.
Oh, Lockhart's like 1-1. He's perfect.
Yeah.
That could be a fun little mini video we do sometime is sort The Office.
That would be fun. I love sorting characters. And I like arguing about which houses they should belong in.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Let us know. Let us know if you want to see that, and we can always make a mini pod or something.
A mini pod,
that
or
I'm not a part of
your YouTube channel, or why not?
Well, if it's just The Office, then I think you're gonna want someone that cares about it more than me.
That's
but
fair.
It's just like fictional characters and there's some Office characters sprinkled in there, then yeah, I could do that.
Yeah, we could do a running series if we wanted.
We could and just pick different
Parks and Rec characters. Places.
I would do that too. Yeah.
How I Met Your Mother. Where's Barney? Slytherin?
Slytherin.
He's pretty loyal. And he's very good at, he's like a very hardworking guy, especially for getting girls.
Is he hardworking or does he find ways to cheat the system?
Depends what the cause is.
Ultimately, if we're going with the bulk of the show, Barney is a Slytherin.
But pre-suit,
I think
Barney
started as a Hufflepuff. Yeah. And then
I see
Ted's Ravenclaw
evolved into a Slytherin. Yeah.
Which really, I think Slytherin and Hufflepuff are more like similar than you give them credit for. Like a lot of times when you have a lot of ambition and drive, you end up working hard. Mm-hmm. It's just, where does that hard work come from?
Yeah, that's why I think that ambition kind of got I think it's been raised up too high in people's understanding of Slytherin.
That's fair. Again,
it's also just like the house to throw your bad guys in.
I'll give you guys a media idea, a controversial media idea for you guys.
Okay.
Sorting countries into houses.
Well, America's a Gryffindor because they're loud and
obnoxious. I was going to say Slytherin, but
put the UK in Slytherin, though.
I mean, you can make an argument that all quote-unquote world powers are Slytherin, or have been.
Yeah.
Are we going by the people, or are we going by the government?
There we go. Or anything else with the books? With this book?
I know, it turns out I don't have a lot to say about just one Harry Potter book.
Going forward, I say we each have our rankings of the books. We've only done one so far, so for me, I'm just going to put it at middle, and then once we have two books, we can start stacking things.
I like that. I already have a pretty determined ranking in my head. So you're
biased.
But...
You gotta cut those biases.
But yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. It's actually I haven't read them since I was in college, so it's been a few years, and they reorder every time I read them. Every time. Mm-hmm.
Let's do book versus movie real quick, because you guys said you watched it, right?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, I'm not. I am always in all cases going to be. I prefer the book to the movie.
Unless it's Princess Bride.
As far as Harry Potter goes, sorry. Yes. I'm actually equal book to movie Princess Bride. It's one of the only ones where I'm like, neither is better than the other. Movie might be better. Yeah, I would say so, with the caveat that I am a total book snob and a movie hater. I think that I would say this is the second best movie adaptation in the series.
I would probably agree. I think book one, the movie one, is very special to me because it has so much charm to it that mm-hmm. the movies lose as they get more mature.
Like the exploding effects for Seamus?
No. I think the books hold on to a lot of that, like, magical, like, charm and wit and, like,
Fred and George being actual characters moment.
Yeah. They hold on to a lot of the more lighthearted pieces of the story throughout all of the books, even if there's less as the books mature. The movies go real mature and real dark. And when they do try to put in those little charming moments, they feel really weird. Like, they don't fit with the movie or, like, the rest of the movie. And so I love the first movie because it is so pure and charming and fun. And it's just, let's see this world on the screen. And there isn't a lot of the other, like, we're trying to make this a cool action movie and it's dark and edgy and adult and, you know, that I don't really love about the later movies.
Mm-hmm. I'll say, I think the first one did a good job of trimming the fat to make it into a movie where it could have been, unlike, you know, book five where they cut out a lot of the good stuff. I think with, you know, I mean, it's like a third. The movie is almost a third of the time of the book. And I think they did a good job of trimming out, you know, the stuff that you didn't really need to see to make the main story mostly, like, the coherent and a good adaptation of the book.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's my opinion on it is it's a really kind of a combination with what each of you said. Because I agree that the first book keeps in a lot of the wonder, but something it does lose is a little bit of the side characters.
Mm-hmm.
None of the side characters are quite as well developed. You miss out on small things, you know, Fred and George and the exploding toilet lid, classic. Mm-hmm. You miss out on some of the extended Dursley time, which really isn't needed for the story, but it makes those characters so much richer in their unpleasantness. And you miss out on absolute gems, such as Harry going, I can never remember the difference between a stalactite and a stalagmite. And Hagrid going, stalagmite's got an M in it.
That is a good moment. I remember
in the series
we were watching the movie and you just see Dean Thomas in the background at one point, and I realized that he doesn't say anything that whole movie. You don't even learn his name. Like, he's just there.
You don't know that he's a West Ham fan or that he's a muggle born or that he's going on to star in How to Get Away with Murder. None of it.
One thing that I thought of that as an American has never struck me as odd. But the fact that Mr. Dursley buys a gun in the UK to stop these owls, right? Like, that is not... That's basically... He went to the black market to get a gun to be able to keep these owls away. Because that is highly illegal.
It might have been different in, what was it, 1994?
I doubt it, but, I mean, it could have been.
I don't know. It's, you know...
For our British listeners, let us know. In 1994, was it, in fact, different when it comes to gun control?
Yeah. Firearms were... Gun control started in 1968, according to Google.
Then, yeah, he definitely... Now, to be fair, the guy who sold him the boat seemed pretty sketchy, so...
Handguns were banned in 1996.
But this was a rifle.
Yeah.
Shotgun in the movie.
Oh, really?
Either way, large gun.
Well, next week, I believe we're talking about video game series, so... be on the lookout for that. Other than that, I hope you guys enjoyed the listen. Let us know if you want to hear more about Harry Potter. Let us know if you want to know more about Harry Potter or just books in general. What series do you like? What house are you in? What's your favorite book? Yada, yada. Is it satanic? Are we just wrong? Let us know. If you enjoyed listening, please give us a like, comment, and subscribe. If you're on YouTube, if you're on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please give us a 5-star review and leave a comment and read it off on the podcast. Other than that, hope you guys have a great week, and we'll catch you next time.
Bop.
Avada. Kedavra.
See ya, toppers.
I didn't think I had anything to plug.
Pop, pop.
He knows.
Becca, you got anything to shout out?
No.
All right, you're not going to even shout out your own husband. Okay, I see how it is.
Shout out Robin, his perfect...